I was imagining working in a biscuit factory, where my job is to have 100% test coverage and check coverage of all of those biscuits. That would be my dream job. So I just eat all the biscuits? Yeah, great.
Welcome back, everybody, to the next episode of Continuous Delivery Office Hours, where we delve into the topic of modern software delivery. I am your host, Tony Kelly. I'm back and I'm joined by, Mr. Bob Walker and Mr. Steve Fenton, who are fresh home from KubeCon. But we might touch on that a little bit as we go through, or maybe at the end. But the topic that we're going to talk about this week is, what do good change approvals look like? And I can maybe throw the cat amongst the pigeons with an early question. We've talked a lot about deployment frequency, and we should be deploying in small batches over the last few episodes. So, is there a bit of tension in terms of like change approval and change control in a world where we're saying, hey, we should deploy more and more and more, but we have this, hey, what is the change approval or change control look like in that context?
Yeah, especially if we also want to throw in AI into the topic, because that's also increased velocity quite a bit in terms of being able to deploy and the changes that are coming up. Yeah, absolutely. So it's a really fascinating topic, because it's always a concern of, we want to have people review these changes. That seems to be kind of this default muscle that everyone wants to go to. We have to have this final approval. We have to have all humans always in the loop. And I think it's a reflex of things that have happened years or even decades ago, where something happened in production. So we started putting up all of these different manual gates to prevent something going through into production. Steve, I don't know if you've had any other thoughts about that as well, because it feels like when we have humans in the loop for this approval, this kind of does feel like it's more of a, it's like a reaction to something bad that's happened in the past.
Yeah, I think it probably is a sign of organizational trauma. And I think humans in the loop is an interesting one, because I always feel that it's actually humans on the hook. That's really, that's what it really means, is like the classic, we won't be able to blame the other factors, so we need a name so that we can blame them. So I feel there's an element of that. I suppose it's probably worth comparing some different experiences with these change approvals, so that we can look at what they look like and what they contain. Because I think, to answer the question, you need to think, why are we even doing pull request approvals as an example? Why are we even doing them? What's the goal of doing them? A lot of the times, and Jez Humble said this recently, that it's kind of like theater. It's just that there's another name on there. And if you're getting audited for certain standards, they like to see that someone else has checked the work, make sure you're not stealing all of the rounding errors in your financial systems. But ultimately, there is that element to it where I think we've all forgotten why we might have change approvals and why we might have pull request approvals. And we kind of need to kind of reverse up and say, what is the point of this? What are we trying to achieve?
Yeah, I think that, I do think we've kind of lost the plot a little bit when it comes to these change approvals, where the pendulum swings wildly to either end of the spectrum, where it's completely automated and no people are in the loop, where developer, they check in something and it just does a whole bunch of stuff. And then at the end of the day, you get into production. To the other end of the spectrum, where it's like, no, humans have to be in the loop and you have to review every last little change that goes into production. And it's rather fascinating to watch that. And to your point of what truly are you checking against? So I've worked for various companies as a developer where we had a whole host of different, approaches for change approvals. I've had the formal CAB, which actually turned out to be, I thought it was actually the best implementation of a CAB that I ever went to. And I thought I'd never, ever say that, but it happened daily, and it happened every day at around 11 a.m. And everyone who was planning on going out to production they just put their name on the board and what application they have going out and when they wanted to go out. And those, we would all get together. The whole point of that was less of, did you get all the approvals? It was more along the lines of just coordination to make sure that we wouldn't have any conflicts. Oh, you plan on going out at 7. Well, if you go out at 7, you're also going to impact this deployment for this particular reason. So it's kind of this final check of, we just want to make sure that we're not going to negatively impact the system overall. It was just that final last bit. And I was like, that's actually a really good use of our time. That's not a, we're just checking a box to check a box type of thing. And honestly, if there's only one application going out, we just all kind of get around. I was like, sounds good. All right, see ya. And I was like, it lasted a minute, if that, to all the way to the point of, well, it felt like we were about ready to launch a rocket into space in terms of change approvals, like where you had to get every last little check mark, approval, sign off, everything along those lines. And that was rather crazy to me. But yeah, I'd be kind of curious to see what your experiences are as well.
I really love the story of the change approval that's done. Like, it's almost like a stand up. It's like an obeyer. People go into this obeyer. They look at what's about to happen. They synchronize. It's like the plan is formed dynamically based on what the need is. And it's done every day and it's quick. That's exactly how these things should be, right? It shouldn't be a monthly meeting of the most senior people in your organization, which is the kind of thing that I've seen in the past. It would be in the boardroom. People would humbly come in and effectively beg this room full of people to allow their change out. And then someone would say, well, we're only allowed to do these on a Thursday evening, and we've already allocated this Thursday for some patching, so it can't go out this week. And then you'd be like, what about next week? And then there'd be something else would have been queued up for that Thursday. And basically, you had the situation where developers were being asked to deliver stuff that they could never deploy, right? Because they just couldn't find that schedule. And so things would slip out by weeks and weeks and weeks, even though it was technically finished. And so now you have overlapping work streams, because they're not going to just sit there for 3 weeks waiting for a thing to be deployed. They're going to carry on working. And so now you have overlapping work and all of the knock-on effects of when you find something in that first release, you've already moved forward onto other things. And then you're like, maybe I'll create more branches to manage this. And you just get into a big mess. So I kind of think there's something really fundamental in how you implement the change approval that makes it either work or be a complete disaster. And I suppose if you're an organization who maybe you adopted Agile because you wanted to be able to deliver features quicker, then maybe you moved on to DevOps because you wanted to deliver features quicker. And now you're buying AI because you want to deliver features quicker, but you're still doing this heavyweight change approval process. I wonder how that settles in your brain. Why is it that you're trying to do all of these things because you think you need features faster, but then you literally put bear traps in the way from that happening?
What's fascinating to me is I want to come back to the humans in the loop and reviewing pull requests, because I mean that seems to be a pretty hot button topic. What's fascinating to me about all of that is the fact that we're asking developers and people to review a lot more pull requests that often have a lot more changes coming in. And I would argue that if you see a pull request come through that has over 500 lines of code and greater, if you have see something like 40,000 lines of code, that's a bad pull request. That should not have been submitted like that. That is just fundamentally flawed. I mean, we've talked about over and over again in the series about you need to have small changes get pushed through, because the chance of something going wrong is substantially decreased. And it's a lot easier for anyone to understand what has changed. If you saw a pull request that fundamentally rewrote everything in your application, that's a pretty big deal. And it needs to have a great deal of scrutiny. But that's the extreme end of the spectrum. But I also think that there's also other extremes on ends of the spectrum. There's the small one, but then there's that mushy middle of how big is too big. See something with even 500 lines of code, that's hard for a person to wrap their head around. And then ultimately, the big question is why are you even doing this? Why are you even having a person review this? One of the things that I come back to is, and I think we talked about in the previous episode, was database deployments. And I remember one of the criteria for when we automated the database deployments was yes, we can automate the database deployments. We'll have the deployment go up to dev automatically. We'll have it go up to, you know, test automatically. But when we go to staging, we want to have a DBA review the script, but that's about to run in staging. And like, okay, that's a little late, but okay, let's have them do that. And the reason why is because, and I asked them, I go, why are we doing all this? Why are we going through and reviewing this script? What are you looking for? Because they don't have the context as to why we're making this change. They just get this script or set of scripts or whole series of scripts that could be, you know, I'm making a small change to a stored procedure all the way up to I'm creating an entirely new schema in the database with all of these tables. They don't really have the context behind why we're doing anything. They just see what's coming in. They kind of see the end result. They say, well, actually, we're looking for a couple of things. We're looking to make sure that you're following the standards that we've laid out. We're making sure there's no dangerous commands. So like if I see drop column, drop database, delete table, anything along those lines, I really want to have a chance to review that. Or if there's if I were going to update an existing table or some sort of schema, we really want to review that as well. But for most of the other stuff, we really don't care. I'm like, okay, that's very interesting. So you kind of get an insight into the decision-making process as to what truly are you trying to decide upon that requires you to be injected into this whole approval process. And at that point, in my opinion, you should really automate as much as you can away. So you just look for those dangerous commands. You look for the stylistic, you know, make sure that you're following all the appropriate stylistic rules. And you can automate a lot of that. And that could all be done deterministically. You don't have to rely on AI tooling for that. We've had capabilities to do that for years. And you just look for these particular things. So if you do see a script with drop database or delete table or drop something in it, okay, well, then you should then pause and then have someone take a look at it and go, okay, I've detected something that shouldn't be there or that I'm a little concerned about, and allow someone to go, okay, I'm going to review this and give it the appropriate attention it needs. And so really you're only reviewing a subset of everything that's coming through. And this is no different than manufacturing. You're not testing every last car that comes off the lot or every last screw that goes into a batch. That's impossible. You know, there's millions upon millions of screws. And so you've learned that I need to take a sample of this and I need to find the appropriate cases rather than trying to test every possible thing or look at manually verify every last thing.
I was imagining working in a biscuit factory where my job is to have 100% test coverage and check coverage of all of those biscuits. That would be my dream job. So I just eat all the biscuits. Yeah, great.
You just roll into work. You roll into work after 6 months.
That's right.
Test passed.
Yeah. So I think it's. I think you're right. We shouldn't be asking people to review everything. We should be filtering. We need to get back to those original reasons as well. What is it we're looking for? With the database ones, you had all of these really sensible reasons why someone should check it. Like if we're truncating some data, someone should probably have a double check on that. Totally makes sense. And maybe if someone's adding a new column, and maybe we raise it for a review if it uses particular data types for that column. So someone can just check, we actually use nvarchar, not varchar. So it's almost like linting, which hopefully you could automate maybe even earlier so no one needs to review it. So yeah, I think that makes sense. And I think with the change approvals, there's two sides to it. One is the number of manual approvals that are needed as part of that change approval process. And when we did the compliance through continuous delivery report, we were looking at it in terms of throughput scores, because that's what everyone says they want, right? They want short lead times. They want frequent deployments. And if you have one manual approval, your delivery score is like 60 out of 100. And then as you go up, each approval that you add, you're just diminishing that throughput score until like there were some people with 6 approvals, which seems excessive to me, and their delivery score was 20. So you've literally stopped throughput in order to have this change approval process. And I wonder how much value the fourth person added and the fifth person added and the sixth person added to that process. It must be a super low trust environment that the first 3 people, their reviews don't mean anything because you just don't trust them.
Yeah, And honestly, again, I mean, we also talk about things like sign off. I worked at a company where we had to get sign off from the business owner or from the business analyst or the product manager. If you're waiting until, you know, you're about ready to deploy up to a pre-production or a staging environment to do that, I think you've really lost the plot. That's way too late to get that final sign off. They should be signing off before even merging something into main. Honestly, they should be able to verify that functionality. And even if you did that, maybe you did it after main, hopefully you've automated a lot of those tests. So really they're signing off on, yes, this is what I want. And then you have the appropriate tests to verify that functionality. And then you added that. And so when you do merge into main, you don't have to get that sign off anymore because functionally the code should work how you expect it. And that's the whole point of testing as well. So I think I also think that automation, these change approvals, they hide bad development practices, where you don't have the appropriate testing in place. You don't have the appropriate linting and checks in place, and you're not performing the appropriate security scans, or you're not doing any of the appropriate things that you should be doing in an automated fashion to verify all of this.
Yeah, I agree. And it would be interesting to see what would happen if maybe people just reviewed the tests to say these would catch any of the problems that we would review for. That would be a cool scenario.
I agree with that. I also disagree. I don't think they should be reviewing unit tests because I don't expect, say, I'm thinking of maybe like a QA person or a business owner or business analyst. They wouldn't be able to understand the context behind that. But maybe if you have a higher level where it's more of an integration test, where you're kind of testing up some common setups, when you can kind of walk through that.
Yeah, I'm thinking like BDD style Gherkin syntax type tests where you'd have explicitly a test that, for example, the classic case of rounding errors.
Yeah,
you'd have tests that have all kinds of transactions happening and then that validate that all of the money is accounted for. And, you know, that those tests are the check rather than someone reading a line of code that you've changed to look for that problem. But yeah.
Yeah, It's such an interesting topic because I know this has become a hot button topic internally as well, because we've had some conversations around what is really the point of a pull request. Do we even need to have one? Could we get rid of it and have all this automation? And I also question if it's truly a problem depending on where you're at. So sorry, what I mean by that is, if you've automated everything to the point of, hey, we've automated this testing, we've automated all the verification, we have the appropriate code analysis, we have all of these steps, and we're doing all this verification, so we don't have to ask people to do it. And so what people are truly reviewing is the code, is it actually conforming to the solution that as a company that we've decided upon. So you've worked with your pair, or you've worked with your principal engineer or your lead developer, and they've kind of established, okay, this is the direction we want to go. And so the lead developer is reviewing the code and go, yep, this is exactly what I was thinking. It makes sense. I'm not concerned by it. Versus they went completely off in a randomly different direction and you have no idea what they're doing or why the solution is going to do what it's going to do. You kind of just pulled the rug out from everybody. At that point, I think that's a really valid point to have kind of that final review, because you want to make sure that as a company that, you know, everyone can understand the code that's going in. As a team, you want to make sure that you have that consistency over the inconsistency of a novel solution, and making sure that it is readable, that anyone else can understand it, because you understand it when you write the code at that point in time, but you don't know if you're going to understand it 6 months later. I always joke that past Bob is always a jerk to future Bob because of that, because I write code, then I come back 6 months later, I'm like, what on earth was I thinking? I have no idea how any of this works. And it takes so long to get into the mental space of understanding truly what the solution is. And so you know, okay, this is what I need to change. And so making it readable, making it more understandable, and having that kind of final check of having a person take a look at it and go, yes, I understand what this is doing. I understand this idea. Oh, this was a novel approach, but the entire team agreed that this was the right approach to take. That to me is the right, that to me is a good point for a change approval. But I also think that they shouldn't be onerous at, you know, it shouldn't be the thing that slows you down. It shouldn't be taking hours upon hours upon hours to do. It should be, I've reviewed this. This makes a lot of sense. Okay. You're not giving it a rubber stamp, but you're just verifying. you're doing that kind of final check. And ideally then it's not slowing you down. That's not, that shouldn't be the slow part of your delivery life cycle.
Yeah, I've had a couple of questions that sort of came to mind. And I suppose in a way, parts of this will wrap up in some way to like a risk and compliance scenario and some depending on your industry and organization and stuff. But is there any, I suppose, organizations that have to satisfy regulatory requirements to some extent, is there a, again, is there a conflict there, or how would we convince them that having your change process largely automated is a good thing? And I suppose a follow-up question within that, if they have to, if they have to audit those changes, what does a good audit trail look like that you can still go back and look at that and say, here's who changed what, where, and when, and audits are good. They've given a thumbs up there. What does that look like?
Well, oftentimes it's the fairly common approach I think people make is, or believe is, that the person who makes the change can't be the person who pushes the button or deploys to production or does whatever the thing is. And I think that stems honestly from the quote unquote bad old days when developers, they could just sign on to production and make whatever change they wanted to make. And they're like, yep, I'll do what I want to do, that type of thing. When you can show and prove, especially if you look at, say, I'm GitHub Actions and pull requests within GitHub, when you can see everything that's happening, and that is something that you can hand over to auditors, go, look, these are all of the checks that ran, and that's why it was auto approved. That's much easier in my mind than even showing, hey, a person reviewed it. Because if a person reviewed it, said person starts review, person ends review 30 seconds later, was that really a review that could pass any sort of scrutiny?
Yeah, and the segregation of duties is about that pathway. So it can be satisfied by a developer writing a feature and a tester testing that feature. And you usually have a third person making the decision to do the deployment. So the idea of there being one person who can do the whole chain and get something into production with no one else touching it, it's a pretty rare scenario to be like that. And I would say if you're in that scenario, it's probably because you're not in a regulated industry. You know, so if I'm doing web development and I'm changing someone's theme, then yes, I might be the everything. I speak to the customer, I do the change, I upload it to their site. But if you're working on like a financial application, there's no way you're doing that on your own. It's just not possible to do that.
Yeah. There's at least one other person that's reviewing. And the review, it might not be from another developer. It could be from the business owner. It could be from the your product manager. They're the ones that are reviewing that change and making sure it's going to behave how you expect it to behave.
All right. We are almost at time, folks. Steve, question of the week time.
So I was going to ask, like, what's the worst change approval process that you've seen? We may have already touched on it. For me, it was I was working on a software project, and we had to get wet ink signatures from everyone who was a department head. So I had to get from the head of development. That one wasn't too bad. And I had to get it from the COO, who was in charge of like the business who was using the software we were building. That wasn't so bad. But then I needed to get it from the head of finance. And he didn't understand what we were talking about and needed lots of explanation before he'd put his signature on it. And then just these, it would get further and further away from anyone who knew what we were doing from a software perspective. And they would become more and more reluctant to actually sign it. So you'd get people who would just be like, oh, you'll have to come back later. And they would just kind of put roadblocks in the way. Other people would say, leave this with me and I will get it back to you. And that would be like the black hole of, you know, the whole thing would go missing. So that's probably the worst change approval process I've ever encountered. And it made no sense. But as Bob said, it's because they had a deployment that went really badly wrong. And they thought this would somehow stop it. You know, they thought the head of finance would go, before you deploy, I've noticed that on line 52 of the finance.c# file, there's a bit of an error there. I don't know what they were thinking.
I had a couple of encounters with change approvals that we had to involve the customer or customers. And that is, you want to talk about a black hole. That's a black hole because we had put it out there on in a pre-production environment for them to access. And they wouldn't touch it for 3 weeks, 4 weeks. while we were waiting for them to, and the code would be ready to go. Like we had verified, we've tested it, had QA verified, do all of those other things. And so when we had the customer, and then the customer would come and it's like, well, that's not how we want it to work. I'm like, well, so that's clearly very much as an indication of a waterfall methodology. And so that's, I think that again, it's to the point of, well, something happened years ago and it impacted this customer and they had, again, now they had to be involved with every single deployment. And then we had another scenario where something else impacted a different customer and they had to be involved with every scenario. And something else happened and now another customer. And so eventually you end up with a situation where you have like 10 plus customers who have to review every change before it goes out to production. And they all have different time schedules and none of them can agree on any, they can't all agree on how something should work exactly. And so they kind of hold it up a little bit. And that was probably the most frustrating when that particular thing happened.
Yeah, that it's one of those things, right? The trust has gone. And so the bureaucracy comes in, which is the most common trigger for it. And the DORA research shows that that's actually the way to make things less stable. That's the result of doing this. So it has the complete opposite to the intended effect. We do, I will make sure there is a link next to this that points to the capability culture cycle, which is the better way of getting out of that trust problem. And I'll also make sure there's a link to the compliance through continuous delivery report, where there's a lot of in-depth analysis of not just the number of approvals, but how different approval chains perform better. I suppose the spoiler on that is if the team signs off their own work first, and then their direct manager signs it off next, the approval chain is always going to be better, even if it then has to go outside of the team. So both of those are needed to make it a performant chain. But the ideal is you don't have a chain. You can do it in like a single step if you have to do it at all.
You just spoke of bureaucracy. I want to end on the worst idea I've ever seen when it comes to bureaucracy. So I worked on a team and we provided software to a variety of different customers without giving it away and trying to throw any company under the bus. But how it worked was we were responsible. We were the back end team. And so we had to process jobs. Like our team was responsible for all the jobs that processed overnight. And we had, I think that's like three jobs that consistently failed during a month, like this month time period. The idea, the solution that was thought up by the director, and he was really proud of this, by the way, was we were going to have the most junior person wake up at 2 a.m., verify the job ran successfully, and if it didn't, all they had to do is restart it. And at most, 9 times out of 10, that would be the solution. Wake up at 3 a.m., check a different job, verify that it ran. If it didn't run, then restart it. And 9 times out of 10, that was the solution. Wake up at 5 a.m., check it, test it, make sure it works. And that went on for probably until that, unfortunately, that most junior person, he was let go because he couldn't complete any tasks because he was exhausted from having to be up in the middle of the night all the time.
Just do a night shift. Why go back to bed in between? Yeah.
I asked him, I go, are you going back to sleep between these? Like, it's like, not really between the 2 and 3 a.m. stuff, not really, but between the 3 and 5 a.m., I can typically get back to sleep for about a couple hours and then wake up. I'm like,
doesn't sound healthy.
Yeah. And unfortunately, once he was let go because of the obvious performance reasons, the senior person who was then assigned to is like, well, nuts to this, and just wrote the appropriate retry logic. And he just did it on his own, like one night. And it's like, I'm just going to solve this problem right now. And we never had another problem ever again. But no one was willing to fund the actual solution, which was to add in the appropriate retry and verification logic. It's like, nope, this is the solution. This is how we're going to fund it.
Well, that's a perfect example there of needing to complete the pain loop, mm-hmm. right? Is you can't have any situation where something that you're doing is just hurting someone else. It has to come all the way back around. And that is highly motivating. Then as soon as I have to get up at 3 a.m., I can promise you that problem is going to be solved.
To this day, I still can't believe that was a solution. And this wasn't like a 1990s type of project, man. And this was in the 2000s.
Well, we're not naming any names, but whoever it is, shame on you.
Yeah, we should finish with a nasty call out each week. There we go.
If you happen to be the one of the people that actually watched this, yes. It's like he just Bob just made the list.
Email him the link.
Yeah, yeah. Honestly, I don't even know if he's he might be retired at this point, because this is very clearly this was a person who worked in the era of mainframes, and this is what they this is how they solved problems in that era.
Super, very interesting. Thank you both very much. That is us for another week. Thanks for watching, everybody, and we will see you in the next episode. Bye bye.
Bye all.
Bye bye.